Well, good morning, everybody. I have been excited about this morning, just to be able to share with all of you, not just from the standpoint of my role with Expectations Women's Center, but also just as one of your brothers and sisters here, part of this church family, and just journeying together and growing together. So, I just want to first begin by sharing with you my story and my journey at Expectations. I think it's so important to hear how God works in our lives, just to be reminded that, as the songs that we sang this morning, that he's mindful of us, that that he knows our name, that he has a plan for each one of us. And I just want to testify, I guess, first and foremost, to God's goodness and faithfulness and his involvement in my life. And hopefully, just that you'll be encouraged and inspired in your own walk with the Lord as you just seek to live out what his will is for you. And I will forewarn you, my family may laugh. I've never been a great summarizer. In high school, when I had to summarize something, somehow the summaries always ended up longer than the original the original article to begin with, but I will do my best. But there are a lot of just amazing details of how I am where I am today over the last year and a half, and so I'm going to do my best to share that with you. But so it was about 2 years ago, and I was working as an emotional support aide up here at the elementary school, and I was preparing to marry Mike and become a family with him and the kids. And I really enjoyed my job at the school, and for the time, the season I was in, it was just a perfect fit. I was living with my pap, but I also knew that I needed something that was going to provide a little bit more consistent income throughout the year. And one day, Pastor Crow handed me a letter that he had received from Expectations, and it was a letter that they had sent to a lot of their supporting churches in their quest to find somebody to serve as a part-time bookkeeper and receptionist. So I did take the time to connect with Pam, the executive director, just to ask a few more questions, and I did ultimately apply for the job, and God saw fit to grant me that position, which I started June of 2015. Then in about a year ago, February, March last year, I had the opportunity to participate in our volunteer training series, which is just something that's required for staff just to give us a better perspective on the ministry that we're involved in. And this might sound like a random detail, but I have learned by now that there are no random details when you're a child of God, that it all makes sense. But I met a beautiful woman at training named Lori, and she and I just really enjoyed fellowship together, and just was one of those people I had felt like I had been friends with a long time. So I just want you to remember Lori as we move through the story. So fast forward a couple of months after training, and one of the awesome things about being on staff at Expectations is the leadership really understands how important it is for those in ministry to intentionally take time to be refreshed and to be renewed and to have our cups filled. And so twice a year, we actually get paid to have a dog day, which is a day alone with God. And I had scheduled my spring dog day last May, and ended up that day getting sick, and I was in bed all day, and so took it as a sick day instead of a dog day, and scheduled it two subsequent times due to unforeseen by me. God saw it all, but I had to reschedule it, and finally took it on July 11th, and packed a lunch and my Bible and some devotional materials, and tried to leave my agenda behind, and I headed up to RB Winter State Park to spend the day with the Lord. And I tried to be a really good listener. That can be hard. We have to really be intentional about slowing down and being still, don't we, in our fast-paced world. But tried to be a good listener, and God just spoke to me in several really amazing ways. And part of my day took me on a walk along the dam. And as I was coming back around, this may look like a familiar scene to some of you. I took this as kind of a memorial picture for myself, just to remember God that day. But I was walking by the dam and noticed how the grass was growing up out of the water. And in my mind, the word grass was translated to reeds, What Bible story comes to mind when you think of the word reeds? The story of Moses, exactly. And I can be slow sometimes, and I sort of thought that was kind of random, and well, what does that really have to do with anything? But I thought, no, I really better pay attention to this. And so I sat down on the swing that you see in that picture, and I opened my Bible to reread the story of Moses, and that's in Exodus 1 and 2. So you'll remember that the Israelites were growing in number, and Pharaoh was getting kind of nervous about that, and so he had ordered the midwives. He said, when you help the Hebrew women in childbirth and observe them on the delivery stools, if it's a boy, kill him, but if it's a girl, let her live. But the midwives feared God, and they didn't do what the king of Egypt had told them to do, and they let the boys live. And then the king summoned the midwives and asked them, why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live? And they gave their explanation. And then further along, we read in chapter 2 how Moses' mother hid him in the bulrushes. So anyway, that story, you know, I immediately made the connection with Expectations Women's Center and the work that they do, working to save the lives of babies. And I was sensing that in my heart that maybe God was calling me to consider the position of center director, which we had found out a couple months earlier that position was going to be vacated by our current director just a few days after this dog day that I was having. So I sat with my journal and to the best of my ability, tried to write down what I sensed God was speaking to me. And another way that he spoke to me was by allowing just a loose paper to fall out from a page of my journal, and I didn't know where it had come from, so I randomly opened a page and tucked it inside, but took a moment because some words on that particular page I had opened to caught my attention, and I had jotted some thoughts down from an Advent devotional that I had encountered December prior to that, and it was a recounting of the story of Esther, and so I want to read that devotional portion of it to you. It says, you've got to use the life you've been given to give others life. You've got gifts that weren't given to line your life with. They were given to be a lifeline to others, or you lose your life. If your gifts don't bring relief, you don't get real life. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world but lose his own soul? You've got to use your position inside the gate for those outside the gate, or you're in the position of losing everything. Esther puts herself in the place of those outside the gate and makes herself the bridge to the king. And, you know, of course, all the references to life there, just continued to speak to me. And I sort of translated in my mind, felt the Lord said, you know, you're already there. You are already inside the gate. But I may be calling you to a different place to serve within the gate. So as I continued to receive what I felt God was saying to me, he chose to have a husband and wife enjoy an afternoon walk right on the path where I had been sitting. So it was kind of a random encounter. And they immediately began engaging me in conversation, and we quickly learned that we were fellow followers of Jesus Christ. And the connection was blessed, and we enjoyed some brief conversation, and before they continued on their walk, they asked if there was anything specific that they might pray about for me. And I realize now that I could have chosen a very different response, but instead I did share with them why I was at the park that day, that I was the bookkeeper at this pregnancy center ministry, and but sensed that God might be calling me to a new position. And so they just prayed very anointed prayers over me. And in the middle of his prayer, the gentleman paused and he said, I believe God's telling me that you are to apply for this job. And that you're ready for it. And so that was just an amazing confirmation, and just a reminder again of how much God loves me. So I felt at that point pretty settled that God had spoken clearly that I was supposed to pursue this position, but I wasn't sure how to approach my boss about it. There were other people that she had been interviewing at the time, And I wasn't completely sure where she was with all of that. And I was like, what do I do, you know? So I continued to pray for clarity and, you know, sought counsel and blessing from Mike and connected with a few other close friends. And confirmation just kept coming through all of them. So I made plans to talk with my boss. And the morning of the day that we had planned to have a conversation, we were just meeting about some other work-related items, and I said, oh, there's something else I'd like to chat with you about. And so part of my devotions that morning was from Mark 1:2, and it said, I will send my messenger ahead of you, and he will prepare your way for you. So I was like, okay, I can do this. God's already on it. And so at the office, as I opened my email, there was a devotional. And it was entitled, What It Means to Be Chosen, and it was written by a woman named Virginia Prodan. And, of course, just the title caught my attention with all that God was orchestrating, and the fact that this woman is a Romanian, that was just doubly amazing to me because of my connection there and ministry there. So I took some time to read it, and it really did just propel me into my conversation with my boss with a lot of peace. And this is what I read. You see, when God chooses you to do his work, and I believe he has chosen all of us to do his work, not only will he provide you with everything you need, but he will protect you from peril until that work is done. That's what it means to be chosen. Doesn't have anything to do with us, does it? It has everything to do with his provision, his protection, and his plan. So anyway, I met with my boss just a few hours later, and I asked her how she would feel if I added my name to the mix of people she was considering for this particular position. And I was surprised, and yet, with all that God had already orchestrated, I probably shouldn't have been, but he still catches us by surprise because he just is that way. But when I was surprised when she said she would love to have me submit my name to be considered, because actually, even just that morning, she had just been wondering if it was something that I would be interested in. So my messenger indeed had gone before me to prepare the way for that to happen. And we found humor in the fact that while she had had this thought, you know, wondering if I would be interested, she came to the conclusion that I knew, you know, that she was looking for somebody, that the position was going to be vacant. And she figured if I was interested, I would approach her about it. And at the same time, I was just secretly thinking how confirming and simple, you know, this whole thing would be if she just out of the blue one day said, hey, Shauna, you know, this position's empty, you know, would you like to fill it? I thought, well, that would just be, you know, make the whole thing a lot clearer. But God wanted me to exercise some faith and have that conversation. So anyway, we did talk more and just prayed a few more prayers, even though it seemed like God had already made it clear what his plan was. But he met us at each place. And so here I am, nearly 7 months into my new role already, certainly not feeling like I have it all together, but knowing because God has been so faithful that I've been chosen for such a time as this, and that's really exciting. And remember Lori, I said, remember Lori, the lady that I met at training? Well, she happened to be hired back in May, 3 months before me, as the center director for our Williamsport center. And so, you know, God is just so awesome. Even a year ago, before that thought was even in my mind, he was already preparing just a co-worker relationship and just allowing us to have that connection. So no detail is too small for him, is it? So I do feel very humbled and privileged that God has called me to this. And, you know, it has been affirming to be able to see his hand at work so clearly. He doesn't always allow us to see that, and most of our journey, I think, is walking by faith and not by sight. But I think he knows when we need this kind of experience just to hold on to a call, because I know the journey won't always be easy. But it is nice to just be able to see how he has worked and perfected his purpose. And I do love what I do, and I know that it is because of him that I'm here, not because of anything that I can bring to the job, but because of what he wants to do in me through it. We talk about that a lot at the ministry. He doesn't call us there because we know what we're doing, but he wants to do something in us because God is always up to the business of transforming the lives of those who are willing. Thank you for letting me share that with you. There's a lot that I left out, but I think you get the idea that God was definitely involved. So as we're talking about the transformation that a relationship with the Lord brings, I want to share with you a familiar story of the woman at the well from John 4. And this is the version that Max Lucado shared in his book entitled 6 Hours, One Friday. It says, her eyes squint against the noonday sun, her shoulders stoop under the weight of the water jar, her feet trudge, stirring dust on the path. She keeps her eyes down so she can dodge the stares of the others. She's a Samaritan. She knows the sting of racism. She's a woman. She's bumped her head on the ceiling of sexism. She's been married to 5 men. 5. 5 different marriages. 5 different beds. 5 different rejections. She knows the sound of slamming doors. She knows what it means to love and receive no love in return. Her current mate won't even give her his name. He only gives her a place to sleep. On this particular day, she comes to the well at noon. Why hadn't she gone in the early morning with the other women? Maybe she had. Maybe she just needed an extra draw of water on a hot day. Or maybe not. Maybe it was the other women she was avoiding. A walk in the hot sun was a small price to pay in order to escape their sharp tongues. Here she comes. Have you heard? She's got a new man. They say she'll sleep with anyone. Shh, there she is. So she came to the well at noon. She experienced silence. She expected solitude. Instead, she found one who knew her better than she knew herself. He was seated on the ground, legs outstretched, hands folded, back resting against the well. His eyes were closed. She stopped and looked at him. She looked around. No one was near. She looked back at him. He was obviously Jewish. What was he doing here? His eyes opened and she ducked in embarrassment. She went quickly about her task. Sensing her discomfort, Jesus asked her for water. But she was too streetwise to think that all he wanted was a drink. Since when does an uptown fellow like you ask a girl like me for water? She wanted to know what he really had in mind. Her intuition was partly correct. He was interested in more than water. He was interested in her heart. They talked. Who could remember the last time a man had spoken to her with respect? He told her about a spring of water that would quench not the thirst of the throat, but of the soul. That intrigued her. Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw the water. Go, call your husband and come back. Her heart must have sunk. Here was a Jew who didn't care if she was a Samaritan. Here was a man who didn't look down on her as a woman. Here was the closest thing to gentleness she'd ever seen. And now he was asking her about that. Anything but that. Maybe she considered lying. My husband, he's busy. Maybe she wanted to change the subject. Perhaps she wanted to leave. But she stayed, and she told the truth. I have no husband. Kindness has a way of inviting honesty. You probably know the rest of the story. I wish you didn't. I wish you were hearing it for the first time. For if you were, you'd be wide-eyed as you waited to see what Jesus would do next. Why? Because you wanted to do the same thing. You've wanted to take off your mask. You've wanted to stop pretending. You've wondered what God would do if you opened your cobweb-covered door of secret sin. This woman wondered what Jesus would do. She must have wondered if the kindness would cease when the truth was revealed. He will be angry. He will think I'm worthless. This is what Jesus said. You're right. You have had 5 husbands, and the man you are with now won't even give you a name. No criticism, no anger, no what kind of mess have you made of your life lectures. No, it wasn't perfection that Jesus was seeking. It was honesty. The woman was amazed. I can see that you are a prophet. Translation? there's something different about you. Do you mind if I ask you something? Then she asked the question that revealed the gaping hole in her soul. Where is God? My people say he is on the mountain. Your people say he is in Jerusalem. I don't know where he is. I'd give 1,000 sunsets to see the expression on Jesus' face as he heard those words. Did his eyes water? Did he smile? Did he look up into the clouds and wink at his father? Of all places to find a hungry heart, Samaria. Of all the Samaritans to be searching for God, a woman. Of all the women to have an insatiable appetite for God, 5-time divorcee. And of all the people to be chosen to personally receive the secret of the ages, an outcast among outcasts, the most insignificant person in the region. Remarkable. Jesus didn't reveal the secret to King Herod. He didn't request an audience of the Sanhedrin and tell them the news. It wasn't within the colonnades of a Roman court that he announced his identity. No, it was in the shade of a well in a rejected land to an ostracized woman. His eyes must have danced as he whispered the secret. I am the Messiah. The most important phrase in the chapter is one easily overlooked. Then, leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, "Come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ?" Don't miss the drama of the moment. Look at her eyes, wide with amazement. Listen to her as she struggles for words. "You are the Messiah?" And watch as she scrambles to her feet, takes one last look at the grinning Nazarene, turns, and runs right into the burly chest of Peter. She almost falls, regains her balance, and hot-foots it toward her hometown. Did you notice what she forgot? She forgot her water jar. She left behind the jug that had caused the sag in her shoulders. She left behind the burden she brought. Suddenly, the shame of the tattered romances disappeared. Suddenly, the insignificance of her life was swallowed by the significance of the moment. God is here. God has come. God cares for me. That's why she forgot her water jar. That's why she ran to the city. That's why she grabbed the first person she saw and announced her discovery. "I just talked to a man who knows everything I ever did, and he loves me anyway." The disciples offered Jesus some food. He refused it. He was too excited. He had just done what he does best. He had taken a life that was drifting and given it direction. He was exuberant. "Look," he announced to the disciples, pointing at the woman who was running to the village, "vast fields of human souls are ripening all around us and are ready now for the reaping. Who could eat at a time like this?" This story, to me, beautifully illustrates the mission in the heart of the Pregnancy Center Ministry, of which we are a part. And it might not necessarily detail the specifics of the clients' lives exactly as we see them, but what it does is reveal the transformation and empowerment of a precious life. And that's exactly what we are about as we minister to women and to men of all ages and circumstances, empowering individuals and transforming lives. And while that's our theme primarily as it relates to the individuals whom we serve, we know that our lives, as staff and volunteers, are transformed in the process as well. So as an extension of God's church, Expectations does not exist to be just pro-life, which is the term that we often hear, but we exist to be pro-abundant life. And you know that scripture. It may still be printed in our bulletins from John 10:10. "I have come that they might have life and have it more abundantly." And I just would like to explore together this morning what it means that we are pro-abundant life and how that impacts how we minister on a daily basis at our centers. And I think that you'll find that much of what propels our work, what we're going to be learning this morning, really resonates within your own heart as a Christ follower. But I just would ask that we humbly allow God's heart to beat afresh and anew within us today. So the director of our National Pregnancy Care Organization outlines for us what being pro-abundant life means. And first, being pro-abundant life means embracing Christ. Saving lives for this world is critically important, but you and I know that saving lives for eternity is the most important thing that we can do. We know that true and lasting transformation comes only through a transformative relationship with Jesus Christ. And so, as pro-abundant life people, we will celebrate and encourage efforts to help mothers and fathers making pregnancy decisions to come to transformative relationships with Jesus Christ. Tabitha is a young mommy who recently came through our doors longing for a different life. With two young children at home and baby number three on the way, she was struggling to just get by and to get through the day. Yes, she wanted a different life, but the daily demands made it difficult for her to imagine what that different life could look like, let alone to believe that she could actually have it. We began to plant seeds of truth into Tabitha's heart, gently introducing her to a God who loves her deeply, a God who wants to give her hope fulfillment. We prayed for Tabitha and for her family, and that God would allow those seeds to take root and to grow. After several months, we saw the fruit. Tabitha was ready to receive the gift of salvation and left the office that day with the joy and excitement of a new life and with the hope that with God's help, life can be different. Just like the woman at the well, Tabitha was anxious to leave and to share the news with her family. John was referred to us from a local ministry because he was in need of diapers for his young son. As he talked with his mentor, he surprised himself by also sharing the news that his girlfriend, the mother of his young son, was pregnant again and considering an abortion. He confided with the mentor, saying that he did not want her to abort, but he felt powerless to do anything about it. We're not just a place for women. Because this young man found a safe, welcoming place, he now has hope. John encouraged his girlfriend to come to the center, and now we're ministering to both of them. They've not made a decision yet, at least that I'm aware of, but we're hopeful that they'll choose life. We'll continue to be a safe place for them to work on their relationship and being the best parents that they can be to the son that they already have. So being pro-abundant life means, number two, embracing fatherhood. Fathers are often forgotten in the abortion discussion, but research shows that they are considered by pregnant women to be the most influential factor in her decision to keep or to abort her child. And fathers also, we know, play a critical role in a child's well-being. Having fathers involved, both during pregnancy and throughout the child's life, is essential to providing that child with the best chance to thrive. As pro-abundant life people, we will celebrate and encourage father involvement during pregnancy decisions and throughout the lives of the children who need them. Being pro-abundant life means also, number three, embracing marriage. It's one thing to save a baby. It's another thing to actually raise a child. Marriage is the God-ordained institution that provides children with the best chance to have an abundant life as God desires. Consider the birth of Jesus. God not only provided his son with a mother in Mary, but with an earthly father too. God could have fulfilled his purpose by having his son born to a single mother, but it would have violated his principle for how he wants children to come into the world. As pro-abundant life people, we will celebrate and encourage marriage whenever possible for those facing unintended pregnancies as the ideal environment to raise thriving children. As I hear John's story, I'm reminded of two quotes that I heard at our National Pro-Life Conference that I had the opportunity to attend last September, and I believe it stretches all of us to embrace a broader vision for the ministry that we do. The first quote says, "When you reach a woman, you can save a baby. When you reach a man, you can save a family." And the second one is similar. It says, "Transform a man, transform a family. Transform a family, transform a neighborhood. Transform a neighborhood, transform a community." And I think we could keep going with that, rippling out to broader broader opportunities. So there are many fathers like John who they don't want their child to be aborted, but they feel powerless to speak up and allow their voice to be heard. They don't seem to understand the authority and the influence that they have been given as fathers. And there are many fathers who pressure and influence moms to abort because they also don't understand the importance of their role, that just like the role that God gave to Joseph, In Mary's unplanned pregnancy, unplanned to her, God gives them the role of protector and provider. And we're called to serve these men and to build relationships that allow them to see their value and their authority and purpose as father, and also just to practically support and equip them to be involved in their child's life. We praise the Lord that God's promise in Malachi 4:6, "And he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children," is being manifest in John's heart. And we trust that God will use John's position and influence as father to save this precious life. So John was one of 40 male clients that we had the privilege of serving in 2016. But one of our goals for this year is to see an increase in that number in both of our centers. And God does graciously empower and enable our female mentors to serve male clients. We know how valuable male mentors would be as part of our ministry team. And so while we're praying for an increase in the number of male clients we serve, we're also praying that God would begin to call some men from our local churches to maybe volunteer in this capacity and to really assist us in expanding our ministry to the men in our communities. And I would just ask you this morning, if you would pray with us, to see God's promise in Isaiah 58, verse 12, to be fulfilled, that we will rebuild the ancient ruins. The ancient ruins of our cities, and then we will be known as a rebuilder of walls and a restorer of homes. It's just amazing to me to imagine just the far-reaching impact we can have by serving one man and ministering to him. Finally, being pro-abundant life means overturning Roe versus Wade in our hearts. Legal and political advocacy plays a critical role in saving lives, but hearts must also be changed. If Roe versus Wade was overturned tomorrow, there still would be unplanned pregnancies and sadly unwanted babies. So the question is, are we willing to walk alongside those facing unintended pregnancies by offering material, financial, emotional, and spiritual support? And I love this phrase that we're challenged with. Life decisions need life support. As pro-abundant life people, we will minister to women and men facing pregnancy decisions. We will open our hearts to all of God's children and dedicate ourselves to eliminating the desire for abortion, regardless of what the law says. 2015 PA abortion statistics revealed that there were 31,818 abortions and that there were 252 within the 5-county area that we serve. And our mission at Expectations is to make abortion unwanted and unnecessary here in the Susquehanna Valley. And one of the most significant goals for the upcoming year, I mentioned we want to increase our male clients that we serve and also increase male volunteers. But another one of our goals, and probably the most significant, is the addition of limited ultrasound services to the women that we serve. Statistics reveal that on average, 4 days pass between a woman receiving a positive pregnancy test and her decision to abort. So that means we have very little time to reach those that we're called to serve. A second statistic is even more alarming. Women who planned to have an abortion but who first visited a pregnancy center where they were offered an ultrasound, changed their mind, and chose life 67% more often than women who visited a center that did not offer ultrasound. We know how powerful ultrasound can be. And in fact, when we speak to women who are considering abortion, we tell them how important it is to have an ultrasound prior to an abortion. But imagine our frustration when in that same conversation, we have to tell women that we can't offer her something that we just told her is really important. So we are well on our way to seeing this dream of ultrasound become a reality. And one of our first steps in order to meet the codes of a medical facility has been to relocate our Lewisburg Center. Our video showed our center at North 3rd Street, where it has been located ever since Luann started the ministry 26 years ago, I think now. And so that's not currently where we are. 2 weeks ago, we moved our center to the Bull Run Professional Building, which is next to La Primavera Restaurant. You guys probably all know where that is, but kind of tucked back in there. So we're really excited about that, and we are going to be having an open house in a few months here. So certainly you all would be welcome to just join us there and see the new facility and also just celebrate God's goodness and faithfulness. Other steps that we have taken include beginning the creation of medical policies and procedures, identifying a nurse manager as well as a medical director to oversee the facility. And then final steps we have to take include special training, which actually is happening next week for some of the staff and administration, and also just to physically set up the ultrasound room and have that running by the end of this year. So we're thankful the Lord has been working to provide for us. We have about half of the funds that we need to cover startup costs plus the first year of operating expenses for ultrasound, and just really looking forward to the new opportunities that God will open up by being able to provide that. We had the opportunity last year to minister to 27 abortion vulnerable clients, and we expect those numbers to increase as we have the opportunity to add ultrasound. And in our conversations with these women, we're able to give them truthful information about the life that's growing inside of them, but also about procedures that they're considering along with potential risks. Some of them change their mind and choose life, like Samantha. Sam had just had a positive pregnancy test at her doctor's office and admits she had no idea how to respond to the news. Suddenly, the life that was mapped out so clearly was nowhere to be seen. Thankfully, she found her way to one of our centers. Sam admitted that she was considering abortion. That would seem to be the most convenient answer and one that was supported by others in her life. But at expectations, she has been able to stop, to take a deep breath, and to talk about her fears. She's found someone to walk through the fog with her, to listen, to pray, to educate her on all her options, and to share the hope and the love of Jesus Christ with her. Sam came for several appointments, each time talking with her mentor about the things in her life that led her to believe abortion could be the best option for her. Already a mother of several young children, she was trying to complete her education, there were financial pressures, and there were pressures from other people in her life. And all these made it difficult for Sam to think that there could be any other option. But today I'm happy to say that Sam did make a decision for life. Does that mean her life is easier now? No. But as promised, expectations is there walking with her and reminding her that there's hope in the unexpected. And we continue to pray and be available, allowing the Holy Spirit to minister to her heart. Some women receive the same information that Sam received when she found us, and yet they make a different choice. At least 80% of all abortions are performed on unmarried women. 50% of U.S. abortions, 50% of U.S. women obtaining abortions are younger than 25. Women between 20 to 24 obtain 33% of U.S. abortions, and teenagers obtain 17%. And there are many reasons, as we noted in Samantha's story, that women may see abortion as their only option, that a baby would interfere with work and school and other responsibilities. They say they can't afford a child, or that they don't want to be a single parent. And you may be surprised to learn that these are not just women with these pressures outside of our walls making that choice, but a national survey that was commissioned by the CareNet organization that we're part of recently revealed that 4 in 10 women were regularly attending church at the time of their abortion. So we may look at this list of reasons that women give for choosing abortion, and we might think that they're invalid reasons, and we wonder, well, how could anybody possibly make such a decision? But the reality is these are very real pressures in the lives of the women and the men that we serve. And God still blesses us with the opportunity to minister truth to them, even after their decision, the truth of his love and his grace and his forgiveness and healing. And that's our role as an extension of the church and as followers of a compassionate Redeemer. And we answer the call to minister to them and to journey with them to freedom that is found in Jesus Christ. Tabitha, John, Samantha, and many other men and women, much like them, need us. And they need you, the church, just like our former clients needed you. I don't know if you noticed in the video, there was a common denominator between all three of the women whose testimonies we heard. Did anybody happen to catch it? They were introduced to expectations by the church. So three out of three, that's pretty powerful, isn't it? You have an important role in what we do. Because you know the key to abundant life, and as we said before, life decisions need life support. You know the one. We know the one who is abundant life, and we can give that, can't we? So I want to just take us back to the story of the Samaritan woman and think about some things that are revealed in that. First off, Jesus was interested in her heart. He talked respectfully with her. He was kind and gentle. He was not angry at her. He did not consider her worthless, and he withheld criticism. And in his presence, this is the transformation that happened. The woman was honest with Jesus. She left her burden behind. She experienced her shame disappear. She felt like she mattered, and she knew that Jesus cared and loved her. Vast fields of human souls are ripening all around us and are ready now for the reaping. So I want to challenge you, just as I was challenged with that Advent devotional revisited in July, you've got to use the life, and I'll say the one life, that you've been given to give others life. You've got gifts, each one of you, that weren't given to line your life with. They were given to be a lifeline to others. So I'm wondering this morning, what gifts have you been given to be a lifeline, to be a bridge to the King for someone? Maybe it's the gift of prayer and intercession. Maybe you have been given the gift of financial and material resources. Maybe you've been given the gift of extra hours in your week. Maybe it's the gift of teaching. It can be different for all of us, but we've all been given gifts. And these are just invaluable ways that as the church, you can practically live out what it means to be pro-abundant life with us. And you can do that without us, just as God's people, right? But we sure do love to work together with our churches to support and equip you in ministering and reaching lives. So I just want to thank you again for the opportunity to share this morning. And I will be out in the foyer at the close of the service, if you have any questions about anything. We are starting a new volunteer training this Tuesday night. It's not too late to sign up if you have any remote interest at all in getting connected to work with clients. Maybe you're interested in learning about our golf tournament. I know our church has a lot of golfers, and that's one of our biggest fundraisers. It happens in May. You know, there's special Bible studies. Maybe you know somebody who has experienced or is experiencing just the emotional and spiritual and mental stress of having gone through an abortion, and we have a special Bible study designed for those individuals. So lots of things going on at Expectations. It's an exciting time to be involved and just be swept up in what God's doing. That's what we always say. He just kind of carries us along, and we get to just experience his awesomeness. So